This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, your pop culture home.
Yeah, Frank here has got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard room.
No, not billiard, not the billiards. It was
billiards room.
Come on already. Come on, we call it the...
The Place to Be.
The Place to Be, yes, the Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nations, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
D'Lo Brown interfered with a frog splash and hit it on Severin, getting some revenge.
I know.
What the hell was it? What was that laugh? It was like an old cartoon fucking Hanna-Barbera dog or something. It was like Snidely? Was that the fucking dog that laughed like that?
AR's got a little more time than I do to sit and actually rewrite a whole show.
This is the third time you said it to me today now. I'm really curious.
Well, I'm not saying that you have nothing to do. I'm just saying that
you're curious
day...
I'm curious how I have more free time than
no,
you.
I'm gonna...
What does that mean?
I don't know.
I know it's been a rough, and I'm not used to this long, grueling podcast schedule.
Oh, for fuck's sakes. Were you going to just joke and go on for the next hour?
Fun. Did you say D'Amato, late 20s, 30s? And you included yourself in that as well?
I was being nice to him. I am still technically in my 30s.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
What the fuck is a shock wall? Is that the shock master's wall? He's going to go through the shock wall.
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself.
PTB Nation. Let me know what
you're our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richards.
I made the change from a common thief to up close and personal with Robin Leach. And I'm far from cheap. I smoke stuff with my peeps all day. Spread love, it's the Brooklyn way. The Moet and Alizé keep me pissy. Girls used to diss me, now they write letters cause they miss me. I never thought it could happen, this rapping stuff. I was too used to packing gats and stuff. Now honeys play me close like butter play toast. From the Mississippi down to the East Coast. Condos in Queens, in dough for weeks. Sold out seats to hear Biggie Small speak. Living life without fear.
Face de la Nación! Welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I'm your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming at you live here in this action-packed Monday evening in the PCB Man Cave. Yesterday, had football on all the TVs. Tonight, we got Raw, we got football, we got baseball, pennant races, all things going on. I'm back in on the Yankees for the 800th time. I've been in and out. And speaking of a guy who's been in and out 800 times, my PIC, Scott. Hello, Scott. How you doing?
In your house, more than I sometimes care to admit.
In your house.
JR, it is a pleasure. Welcome, PTB Nation, to episode 251 of the Place to Be podcast. And if you'd like to do a countdown to Tres Hombres, be my guest, but 49 episodes is a long way to go. So, got a lot to do. Yeah, it was an interesting weekend of sports. You jumped on the bandwagon, Dr. G and you, standing on a bridge, got off the bridge, got back on the bridge, got back off the bridge. He's pissed off about his Giants. You're thrilled about your Jets. We'll talk more about that later in the week. Not many pretty football games week one. Or a lot of ugly. There's a lot of fugly in week one.
Yeah, we'll talk about that more Wednesday. We have headlines Wednesday, so we'll do more of a
in-depth
NFL pick segment than we did last week. But tonight, Scott, for the first time in a while, I feel all out of sorts.
I know. This always happens, too.
We haven't done a vintage vault in, God, how long? It's been a while.
It's been a while. We've had some awesome guests, that's why.
We've had a lot. Yeah, we had Scott Keith, we had CRZ, we had Kevin Kelly. We've had, I'm sure Chad was in there somewhere. Someone else.
I think we slapped Brad over there somewhere. And
we've had a lot.
Trivia. And
oh, yeah. Well, that's right. I think we've had like 15 trivia matches since the last...
since the last vault. I'm afraid to open the door here because I know he hasn't moved. I know school started.
He may be rigor mortis.
Because I haven't opened the door to
him. Hey, what is going on here?
Oh, God, it fucking stinks in here. Jesus, do you ever leave? Oof. God. Smells like Matt Rotella's basement after a Full House marathon. Oof. Anyway, JR, it is, of course, Vintage Vault. And thanks to Kevin Kelly, we can finally move on with the second half of 2000.
It worked out well. We weren't really waiting for him, but it kind of... That was like the latest possible time he could come on for us to... still be able to get it in before we finish the year out here.
Pretty
much. Or rather that we start the second half.
Exactly. Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault. Yes, no lie. No lie, PTB Nation, because some of you are waiting. Finally did it.
Yep.
Inside the Vintage Vault. It's about a yard. It's not a ring. It's not an arena. It's a yard. Somebody's yard.
Compulsive behavior, addiction, and obsession. With one roll of the dice, they can be on top of the world. Adrenaline surges through their veins. A euphoric rush. Everything is on the line. Every time they take a chance, they gamble with nerves of steel and a cold heart. Unsure of the outcome, they must go for broke. They must let it ride. Exposing themselves to hazards, to risks. The aftermath is unpredictable. In this game, you only get one opportunity. Their fortunes will be made and possibly lost with one roll of the dice. Tonight, those dice are fully loaded. Tonight, these men will risk it all.
We are fully loaded, sir.
How many more gambling isms can you have slapped in there to try and jam that intro in? This is one of our favorites, JR. And I think it's almost a hidden gem as well. I don't think it's talked about as much as some of the other shows in 2000. Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault on the Place to Be podcast, we bring you, as the narrator mentioned, Fully Loaded 2000. Incidentally, JR, the last Fully Loaded.
Mm-hmm.
We've had two previous, 1998, 1999. This one, probably the best of all.
I feel like we've slowly increased the importance. Like, 98 was a definition of a filler show. 99, a little bit more happened. And now here, I feel like this was, like, an actual, like, really big show.
Yes. Yeah, it was. And triple main event, although the third main event is debatable. We'll get into that. A little vitriol tonight, JR. We haven't had to fire up the hate in a while.
King of the Ring we did, but I guess that's better.
Well, that was easy hate because the show sucked. this one's some specific vitriol. And we're joining a new city. A city debut for the first time. Where are we? July 23rd, 2000. Live from Reunion Arena.
Ooh.
From the Metroplex in Dallas, Texas. First visit to Big D. And Reunion Arena. Legendary building. JR will give you the technicals momentarily, but of course a legendary world-class place. World-class championship wrestling, big shows there. The history, JR, of the home of the Mavs.
Opened in 1980, April 28th. Eventually it would close down June 30th, 08. Construction cost $27 million, which would be about $75 million in today's dollars. Who goes into Wikipedia every year and updates the current rate of money?
Poor bastard.
Basketball is about $17,000. Concerts, center stage, 19,000. So what do we say the attendance was here?
The attendance was 16,500.
Unless that might have been increased capacity at some point. Yeah. Your teams, the Dallas Mavericks, of course, played there from 80 to 01. The Dallas Tornado of NASL Indoor. The Dallas Sidekicks of MISL. Dallas Texans of the AFL. Mm-hmm. The Dallas Stars, the NHL, from 93 to 01. Mm-hmm. Dallas Stallions of the RHI. The Dallas Desperados of the AFL. And the 1986 NCAA men's basketball tournament was there.
Yes, the Final Four was there, won by the Cardinals of Louisville. We had, I believe, we don't have it on our... just to finish up, buy rate 1.04, pretty good. And, of course, your announcers, the voices of the Attitude Era, good old JR, Jim Ross, and Jerry the King Lawler. Four, JR. Monday Night Heat matches, I believe.
Sunday Night Heat. Sunday Night. We're really out of it, huh?
Wow, Monday Night Heat, huh?
Monday Night Heat.
There were some years where Heat was probably better than Raw, but yes. Four Sunday Night Heat matches. What do we have?
Four Wednesday Night Thunder matches for Fully Loaded.
Oh, God.
So four Heat matches. Taka Michinoku still hanging around, defeats S.A. Rios. Steve Blackman defeats Taka's partner, Funaki. Mm-hmm. Dean Malenko defeats Crash Holly. And the Dudleys defeated a new team of Lowdown, D'Lo Brown and Chaz. We'll talk about them shortly enough. And the Dudleys, Scott, relegated to Heat here. Kind of a dull month for them.
Mm. Yep. Yeah. Very strange. Well, I mean, we'll get more into this after this first match, the first main match, but the tag division over these last 3 months, kind of not fractured, but I feel like the company at least gave... Hey, I'm about to compliment you. Zip it. I like the fact that that they kind of expanded the tag division, because obviously we talked about the big three, but it seemed like obviously other teams were in the mix and they used them.
Yeah.
So sometimes teams were kind of left out in the cold, but they will tie back in together next week at our next vault. But yeah, Dudleys were the ones that had to take the backseat this, because the Hardys took a couple.
Right. Oh, yeah, they definitely did. And Edge and Christian are actually being more elevated almost into like a main event level.
Yes.
A little bit over this month here. So involved in a very interesting
feud
angle.
Where's the the Dudleys fought who?
Lowdown. We talked about that.
Oh, that's right. It was Lowdown. Yeah. Okay. I thought you said it then on the other match. Yeah, so they took a back seat. All right. This is a fantastic show. And a hot Dallas crowd. I can't believe they've never been here. They were in Houston a boatload of times. Obviously, early on in the Federation years, JR, they were in San Antonio a couple times, but never in Big D until here. So, all right, the opener, fun little match here, and for the first time, the real crown jewel of the women's side of things in 2000 finally has to kind of show her wrestling chops, and it is a 6-person mixed tag. You have the Hardy Boys, as mentioned, one of the studs of the tag division, and their girl Lita, who really hasn't been showcased too much. She's had a couple of matches, but really she's more been at the side of the Hardy. Against kind of a mid-level team that we've seen often this year, and that is TNA, Albert and Test, and their girl, the voluptuous yet untested Trish Stratus. Kind of good build to this. Why don't you give us a little background on how this came about?
Well, after weeks of abuse by Essa Rios, Lita had enough and the two split up. During the final match together, Essa started berating her, and she was eventually saved by the Hardy Boys and stayed with them as their valet slash manager slash occasional partner. The newly dubbed Team Extreme will remain together for quite a while. Of course, the Hardys and Lita all trained in North Carolina, and Matt and Lita were actually dating in real life, so it made sense to put them together. I like the pairing here.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they just kept getting involved in each other's matches. They kept costing each other matches. And Trish and Lita kept having different cat fights and everything else. And Trish kept being forced into, you know, into action against Lita. And finally, after kind of dodging it and laying the beat down on them, they put them together here for a 6-man. So a pretty standard build, but a well-built enough that there was actually some heat to it.
Mm-hmm. I was a little skeptical when this match started, because I thought, well, you're going to see two really good teams, mesh, and that was fine. But obviously, Lita and Trish had to be alone. That's how it's kind of like the old, one of your favorite matches of all time, JR, WrestleMania 6. Guys had to face the guys, girls had to face the girls. So I think you were a little skeptical of what Lita had to do with this untested yet beautiful, kind of a rookie.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely a rookie.
In the ring.
Very
green. And to her credit, whether it was Kresge or whoever was, Pat, or whoever booked the match itself, give them credit, because they found a way, after watching it again today, they found a way to kind of hide her a little bit. They knew she wasn't totally ready, but the fans wanted to see her in the ring. And as a heel, they wanted to see her look bad. So they kind of found a good way to make Lita look energetic. You know, she did a lot of moves outside. And obviously, a majority of the match was the Hardys and TNA. What were your thoughts on TNA at this point? Did you feel that they were starting to slip and it was more pretty much Trish? Because when she first came in, it was, this 3-person team and she was managing them. Now it seemed like, oh, there's Trish and these other dudes. Do you think that was the case as we headed into the summer with them as a team? Or do you think they were still pretty hot? Not hot, but, relevant?
I think it was always that. I feel like it was always them with Trish. Like, I don't think they were ever really... I mean, they've got a good push, but I think they're the same. I think they're just two big guys. that have matches here and there and add depth to the tag division. And I liked this unit. I thought it gave two guys that were obviously kind of lost in the shuffle something to do. Mm-hmm. And it was only tough because Trish wasn't really as strong on the mic, and neither were Test and Albert. So it really didn't talk much. I mean, they didn't really need to, but I think that added to a little bit too, where you thought, okay, well, Trish is there just to talk for them. Okay, nope, she doesn't talk. But it was good to see her get into the ring here. And I like that they played it up where they didn't try and fake it like she knew what she was doing. They made it obvious that she was in over her head in this match.
Yes.
And so every little thing she did, they kind of put over as a big deal. And then Tess and Albert really protected her and let her kind of hide on the apron and get shots in where they could. But I like that they had Lita pinch Trish to finish off the feud and let the Hardys move along and kind of blow it off. Because for weeks, Lita had been trying to get her hands on Trish, and they kept avoiding her. So I thought it was a good match, a good fit. I thought it was a really good opener. Really hot. The crowd was really into it. And like you said, Lita was very over, and they wanted to see Trish too. So probably the best match Test and Albert have been in all year, really. Probably since SummerSlam 99 for Test.
Yeah, probably. And it's amazing, as we document throughout the next 6.5 years of pay-per-view, what happens to these two girls, to these two women between now and, 2006. It almost, there's almost a switch. But obviously, we're not going to tip our hand. We'll get to that as we get there. But it's amazing now, looking into the future, what Trish becomes. But here, she was just, and it's not that she, and it was not for lack of trying. We'll definitely say that. She wasn't like a Sable who, maybe kind of meandered her way through matches with a move here and a move there and then used her wiles. Whereas Trish seemed to legitimately want to know things. She was a sponge for knowledge.
I don't know!
Yeah, at some point, she probably had more work rate than you. So I think, yeah, it was a great opener. Very energetic. Crowd was hot. JR, it was one thing about the announcing in this show, and I don't know if you caught it. I felt like, yeah, he was still doing the puppy shtick, which I guess wasn't a shtick yet. Oh, it was a shtick, but it wasn't tiresome yet, totally. But I do feel like that JR and King kind of leveled out here and really took the matches seriously. And King, King still played the heel. He had to. But he wasn't he was very Jesse-ish in this show. Like, yes, he was pulling for the heels, but at the same time, when it needed it, he was very neutral.
Yeah.
I
think they had a lot of really well-built stories in this show.
Yeah.
It was a nice change from King of the Ring. I thought here we had, and some fresh stories. I thought for a while we had a lot of stories that were really just ambling on from Mania through King of the Ring. All the, Faksheim stuff, and that all dominated. And now I feel like we've shuffled the deck a little bit and gotten some fresh feuds and kind of gotten these other people back on TV, and they've all had pretty good builds. So I feel like there's a lot for them to work with and talk about, which was nice. I think that was a strength during this year.
I agree. Good match, a little over 13 minutes, so nice meaty opener. And the Hardy Boys and Lita, of course, get the win. Lita obviously pinched Trish with one of her patented moonsaults, which she was firing off pretty crisply early on, and gets the win. So good opener. I would say, would you consider, this is a tough question to answer now. You have to really open your mind up, but maybe top 10 pay-per-view openers?
Of all time?
Top 15? Non WrestleMania,
July pay per view in every other odd even year. Yes,
loving women. In
top
it.
Two.
How about this? How about top 10 secondary pay per view?
Oh yeah, easily.
Yeah. Definitely one memorable. Not on any shows.
It's probably in the top 20 or so all time. I'd probably give you that.
Yeah, I mean I know it's a broad spectrum. I just would really want to emphasize that it really is a great match and a solid. One of the best openers.
Yeah, it's very fun.
So, all right. One of the early storylines on this night, JR, backstage, was Edge and Christian, your World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions, slated to defend their titles later on in the evening. Well, we won't tell you who till we get there. But they were trying, of course, as the awesome heels that they are, which, by the way, at this point, JR, they're just firing off all cylinders as heels. They're incredible. They don't want to wrestle who they have to face, and we'll tell you who in a little bit.
And they were doing a lot of that stuff. I mean, Edge and Christian, we'll talk about when we get to their match, but they were really locked in at this point. And with the new commissioner, they were really playing off him well. And it was very entertaining, some of the stuff they were doing. This is, to me, like their peak few months here. They've been really good since they turned heel, but this is like where they're really locked in now.
Yeah.
And really just feeling it.
Yes. So they go to the commissioner. Should we tell him who it is? Should we wait?
Well, at some point we've got to say it, right?
Okay. Might as well get out of the way now.
Yeah, let's talk about how it happened here.
Okay. All right. So the commissioner, technically, I know it's a little bit further down in our review here, bigelow34.prowords.com. The commissioner technically was Shawn Michaels the whole time. Even though he was
Yeah, he's been commissioner since the end of 98.
So. Yeah, even though he's only on like once every 9 months. Oh, here we go. It's during the main event. So the night after King of the Ring, Shawn Michaels.
Preface, I was at that show.
Yes. So give us the juice then, JR. Give us the scoop while you were there.
Oh, I didn't mean to steal your
thunder. If you were there, I forgot it was this show. I knew it was a show that summer. I forgot it was this one.
Yeah, that was a fun one, too. I got a funny story. Well, I guess we'll tell it now. We were leaving after. It was one of the worst parking leaving an arena, like garage I've ever experienced. We were in
this
the garage forever.
Was at the Centrum, right?
Yeah, Worcester, yep.
Okay.
We were sitting forever in the lot. And apparently I only go to Worcester shows when I'm not in Worcester. Like, this is the summer, so we drove up there. so we're sitting in the lot forever. And I dare Jim to get out and grab a big parking, like not a cone. Like, you know, one of the big ones with the handles?
One of the wide ones, right.
Yeah, yep. So we throw it in. And then Andy ends up not letting some guy cut in front of us to get out. And we're, like, 95% sure the guy, like, ratted us out to security. So security comes over. And, like, knocks on the door. And he's like, oh, what do you have there? We had, like, hidden it under, like, shirts or something on, like, jackets. And it's just Jim in the back with this thing, like, his arm around it. And it was just the most awkward explanation. So we had to, I think I ended up doing it. I walked it all the way back up, like, three levels to put it back where I got it. It was just really embarrassing to have to walk that thing back. But anyway, summer hijinks.
Sorry. Oh, that's
funny. So night after King of the Ring, former Commissioner Shawn Michaels made a very special appearance to let the world know that Linda McMahon had sent him there to introduce the world to the brand new WWF Commissioner, Mick Foley.
What?
That's right. Mr. Foley's baby boy returned after being off the screen since April. One of the greatest moments of the year on the 7-3 Raw Foley. Oh, we'll get to that. So anyway, so Mick Foley's back in on TV as a commissioner. And yep. I was sad to see Shawn finally kind of pull the trigger and leave because I feel like there was always that hope he was going to make it back. As long as he was, like, in a role. And so when he came out and said he wasn't commissioner anymore, I felt like they were finally kind of closing the book on him in a way. And as a Shawn Michaels fan, like, it was kind of sad.
Well, I know we seem to always talk about this, but at this point, his back issues were pretty serious, even though he was still doing the academy and that kind of thing. It was the back issues pretty much had been fairly public, and his returning to the ring was almost non-existent.
Yeah, but there's always that chance. If he's a commissioner, he'll be on TV, even in a non-wrestling role. We're always just waiting for him to do more than he was doing because he was so entertaining in the role.
Oh, he was, absolutely.
But it was good to have Foley because Foley was, you know, you missed him on screen and you knew he'd like really dive into the role. He really tossed himself into it, got really involved, and was on constantly and played more of a role than Shawn did. And it was nice for a change, too, to have like the McMahon's not the power. Like, it was nice to have a strong commissioner to go up against, like, Triple H and Stephanie and everything.
Right. The other good thing about it was it was okay to, you know, when you're a babyface commissioner or GM, whatever, you know, you want to add a little comedy to it. But
did Shawn, you think it was too much with Mick?
No. In fact, as a matter of fact, I liked Mick because Mick can be silly. And at times when you're facing a good set of funny heels with a sense of humor, many of them are in the company at this point, two of them here and another one we'll talk about later. They were very, he was a good, funny babyface foil and reverse. Shawn, at this point in his career, Shawn still had the ego and obviously had other issues. It would have been too smarky and annoying. And I don't think he would have fit it right to what they were looking for on camera during this couple month stretch, or at least pretty much through the end of 2000.
Right.
So I had no problem with Mick here. I thought it was awesome. He was lighthearted.
And he was good, though, but he would get serious when he needed to.
Exactly. I was about to say that.
It was in a passive aggressive way.
Right.
Like, he'd be like, all right, Triple H, you got a good point. I'm going to give you a match tonight with The Rock. It'll be you and Stephanie against The Rock in a handicap match. The Rock and the Dudley Boy. You know, so like he would always like set them up and then tease them.
No, he was good at that. Shawn, still was in that smarky mode. So, you know, he would have come off as a douche, and you didn't really want that. You wanted somebody right. that was kind of clean baby face. So, yes, you're right, JR. We all love Sean. But in this specific instance, the role didn't suit him. So it was smart for him to be off camera if he wasn't going to do anything else. But again, I think we were still kind of, yes, oh, is the back okay? Do we know? And, you know, and obviously as time progressed, things got worse for him. But, you know, we'll document that towards the end of the year into 2001. So anyway, getting back, Commissioner Foley is approached by your World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions, Edge and Christian. And Christian says he got food poisoning. Ate some bad Dallas barbecue, maybe. And can't wrestle. Foley's like, because he knows these guys' shenanigans.
Oh, Tom yeah, them shenaniganing it up in the weeks leading up to this.
Yes.
Shenanigizing.
Shenanigizing. Tomfoolerishness. So he said, all right, maybe. Let me go get an ambulance, you know, an EMT person, and we'll see what the scoop is here. So keep that in the back of your mind. That continues. All right, our next match. This is one of the more debatable situations of 2000, and we've talked about it since the year dawned. Taz, who we really haven't found a role for, or what is it, you know, taking on a guy who, Jesus, we haven't seen, well, he's been off camera since WrestleMania, I believe. And it's just been very strange. The week before this show, Taz, still acting fairly heelish, comes into the ring, talks about dominating the company and interfering people's matches to prove his point that he can run roughshod on the company whenever he wants in the ECW, blah, blah, blah. Well, Mick came down, Mick, Commissioner Foley, told Taz that at Fully Loaded, this coming Sunday in Dallas, he would be wrestling, not interfering, and that his opponent was not yet determined. Well, from that point, out came the aforementioned Al Snow, talked about being miserable for the last 6 months because he had to spend every moment with Mr. Personality. You personality, me. Steve Blackman. Jeez, Al, wouldn't we all want to hang out with Steve Blackman? Come on, JR.
CRZ does.
Exactly. You and CRZ want to hang out with Steve Blackman.
I want to hang you out guys with CRZ.
So he wanted to, and I'll just be there. So he wanted to take that misery out on Taz for being unhappy. So Foley was like, eh, because, you know, the running joke is that
Snow sucks.
That Al Snow sucks.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, you know, this is a pay-per-view match. You know, do we really need you in there? And what happened was Mick said that Al Snow constantly choked in the big matches. Well, that was the magic word. So Taz, out of nowhere, locks the Taz mission on Al Snow. And Foley said, all right, you need your revenge. So
well, it was funny because Snow was out cold, and Foley goes, and when Al wakes up, he's going to be angry when he wakes up, and he'll come get you.
Yes. Yes.
So it was good. And I liked this Taz. It was interesting because he was interfering in some really random matches. Like, he kept attacking Rikishi. He would attack Too Cool. He even attacked Trish and TNA at one point, just all over the place with who he was jumping. And he actually even cost Rikishi the IC title, which we'll get to in a little bit.
Yes.
And he made his return the night in Worcester at Raw. That's when he came back from the injury. So this was a much better Taz. Even though he didn't really seem to have much of a reason for his motivation yet, I liked him better as Dick fucking with people than as the gutty little bulldog that was, you know, wouldn't stay down or whatever. So this is much better. This is much more closer to his ECW roots as the Taz like he was there. So I liked this.
Yeah, and of course Taz was kind of nagging an injury, or was nursing an injury, yeah. So that's why he hadn't been on camera much since, or been on in the ring much since Backlash, when they had that another hardcore match, the multiple guy match, Battle Royal. Has Taz? I mean, the match is it's just about 5.5 minutes. Nothing earth shattering. Taz wins with the Taz mission.
Yeah, really not much here.
Yeah, there's really not much to say.
I feel bad for Snow, because I feel like he gets these chances, and everyone's kind of rooting for him, and he finally gets shot, and he never, the matches just never click. Like, he, and it's not him, because he's a good wrestler. Mm-hmm. He has a good personality. He's just been his best in the hardcore stuff, really. It seems like whenever they try and give him anything more, it just doesn't click. And I don't know if it's just he doesn't connect with the fans, but this match just didn't feel like much, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's almost like he needs some kind of gimmick to lean on. Like, he doesn't have that. For a guy who made fun of Steve Blackman's personality, when you need to put Al in something legit, it's just not... Probably the best legit thing he was in, and that involved hardcore, was his feud with Holly in 99. Other than that, when you're trying to be like a legit character, that just didn't seem to be Al's gig, you know? And here was this, another case of that, and, you know, very unfortunate.
Yeah.
That the match was kind of flat. Taz won, which is the right thing to do, and he really did interfere, and we'll talk about again what he did to Rikishi, because he did it a few times.
Mm-hmm.
But Taz wins, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
And I love Taz, but...
Yeah, Snow's just in a tough spot right now.
Yeah, yeah, he is.
There's too many strong personalities, too many high-quality wrestlers, and he belonged just more in the hardcore stuff.
Mm.
They should just turn him back heel again and let him feud with Blackman for the hardcore title. At least there'd be history there.
Exactly, and the matches probably would have been pretty good. So, but to no avail, and he jobs again, and Taz wins in a very nondescript match. All right, so the EMT that Mick Foley gets to look at Christian goes to the bathroom, and Christian is puking in the stall.
Mm-hmm.
Edge is, of course, guarding the stall. And, of course, you know, Edge is doing the classic Christian's doing the classic puking noise. Foley says he feels bad he didn't believe them, and there will be no tag title match on this evening.
Aww.
Bummer. We will tell you, of course, who his opponent, their opponents would have been in a little bit. Then, before we go back to the ring, we head into the...
Huh? Oh, my God. He's coming at you!
I don't know. Was Vince sitting in the stall?
He should have been. That would have been awesome.
But it doesn't happen, sadly. So, no tag title match right now. All right. Before we head back to the ring, we go into the locker room of the power couple, those calling the shots. The Faction themselves, Triple H and Stephanie.
Mm-hmm.
They're hanging out in their locker room, you know, in their little dressing room or whatever, in their suite with a boatload of flowers on the table. And they're just kind of sitting, smiling. In comes JR, our boy Bruno. Harvey Whippleman.
Yeah.
With more flowers.
That's a little appearance.
Yeah, with more flowers. And Stephanie's like, oh, Hunter, these are so nice. Thank you. And Hunter's like, I didn't.
Oh, he's going to take responsibility. Why are you even pretending?
No, Hunter, God.
God, no card. Eat that up. That's bonus points.
Dumbass.
Dumb piece of shit.
And Hunter's like, these aren't mine. I thought you just bought them for the room.
They should have done the reverse. They should have had Hunter get flowers and been like, oh, I don't know who these are from. She's like, I do. I know who they're from.
And nobody knows who the flowers are from until they look at the card. And it says, it's true. It's true. Who's that?
Triple H gets his flowers, and the card says,
time to play the game!
I wouldn't have allowed that on camera, damn it!
It's like one of those music cards that you get, and it opens it up. It's just you saying that.
With a picture.
Time to play with the game!
The picture. And there's one of the pictures from the tailgate, when you're holding the belt, it like pops up, like one of those pop-up cards. Oh, Jesus. That would have been awesome. I think we should make that. All right, in any event.
It's just you on the front that it opens, and it's you laying like gold dust on the couch.
Oh, gee, my God.
Just a sledgehammer blocking you.
Me and Elmo. It's like the me and Elmo. What? All right, so. So anyway, Triple H is pissed off.
Freaking Elmo, right? My daughter, she watches like no TV.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow has developed this infatuation with Elmo just because he was like a character on her diapers. So now it's like Elmo everywhere, like Elmo 24/7. Like we have an app and she's just like obsessed with. It's like a limited app time for her. Mm. And whenever she sees the iPad or goes near it, Elmo, Elmo. It was Melmo for a while. Now it's Elmo.
Elmo.
So we finally bought her a shirt and we got her an Elmo doll. So she's all excited. But it's weird because she doesn't even really know who he is until she saw this app and he teaches her alphabets. But
Elmo. Classic. That wasn't Steve Piscatello's code name, Melmo.
Melmo, no.
Melmo. Nope, can't come in. All right, so he's pissed off because these flowers are not from him. They're from someone else, and you know who that is, and we'll get to him in a moment because he's involved in something else tonight.
Mm-hmm. All right, a lot of backstage stuff this week.
Yeah.
I mean, this show.
This show, there is a lot. Yeah. I mean, I thought because it's funny, as I'm watching it today, on YouTube. I felt like the first, like the undercard of the show took forever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because combined, the backstage stuff was probably a good 40 minutes. If you add it all together, it was crazy. Anyway, JR, our next match is our
40 minutes, but yeah, it was a lot.
Well, 37 minutes shy of 40. Our first title match of the evening, the World Wrestling Federation European Championship on the line. Your champion.
Our champion.
You kind of spoke his language when you opened the show tonight.
I spoke cheeched up Mexican Spanish.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Ley de la Nación!
And that is, of course, Mamacito, I guess. Eddie Guerrero, your European champion, and his Mamacita, China.
Mm-hmm.
They're taking on a fellow Gradical, although that's pretty much dead at this point.
Yeah. Although they'll get Saturn back together. But for now, it's kind of diminished.
Now, Perry Saturn got a little eye candy of his own on his side. And who was that chair?
The woman kindly noted as by CRZ as nipples, and that is Terry Runnels.
Big shock.
She started managing Perry in the weeks leading up to this pay-per-view. So Saturn, kind of another rudderless ship, kind of lost without his Radical brothers. Not much of a personality to speak of, kind of settling into that lower mid-card.
Mm.
So to me, this shocked me. Even kind of, so I didn't, you know, watching it again, it kind of surprised me again. Like, I'd forgotten this even happened.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
Saturn wins the European title from Eddie with an elbow off the top, and it's clean. He gets a clean win.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I think they were prepping Eddie for bigger things, so they wanted to get the title off him, but I was surprised to see Saturn go over him clean.
Mm.
It was a big win for Saturn, helped to legitimize him, his biggest win for sure since coming in.
Absolutely.
And it was, you know, a decent chance to put the gold and see if they can get him going a little bit. So, not a bad match. Again, though, a little disappointing. Yeah, I kind of expected more from these two, maybe the chemistry, similar to Taz and Al, where you expected them to have a little bit more something there. And they kind of just come up short and don't really get clicked or get going.
Right. No. I mean, it was a big win for Perry, and he wouldn't really look this good again for a while. Was still bummed that John Cronus was not brought in. Because it's odd that they, you know,
right?
He was the one guy of the four that was a legitimate tag team specialist. The other three were all solid singles guys, but Perry was a tag specialist. If anybody watched ECW for, you know, all their years,
let me ask you this though: why do you think they didn't just keep him and Dean together? I know Dean was doing like the ladies' man thing, the 007 gimmick at this point.
Yes,
but I thought it was kind of weird they didn't just keep them as a team and let them go into the tag division. I mean, just it seemed like two guys that weren't really... I guess Dean had the light heavyweight thing going on, but a lot of love for the Radicals at this point. I mean, both are holding titles. And again, it's the two you at least expect. So we talked about that last time.
Mm.
The two guys you really wouldn't expect to have the gold, and that is Saturn and Malenko right now.
Exactly. And I mean, the light heavyweight thing, I mean, obviously at Backlash, Dean had that great match with Scotty. But other than that, I mean, the division really has not been that... has not been highlighted. I mean, we haven't had a light heavyweight match since.
What you did, you little jerk!
Okay, maybe it's only 4 minutes of backstage time instead of 40. Being a little sarcastic. I think that I agree with you, because really, what was Dean doing? Yeah, he was doing the Bond thing and all that, but I mean, so? They could have done that together. The fact is that Perry was the one guy in the Radicals that was a legit tag team specialist.
Yeah.
Again, I don't want to devalue this. This is a big win for him. So I don't want to devalue that, but at the same time, they never attempted in the future to use his strengths, which was a power guy in a tag team. It's really weird. But again, I don't want to, you know, be a Debbie Downer and devalue his win, because it is a big win for him.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the last time he actually won a singles title. I don't know if you remember him winning any in WCW.
Again, just like Snow, though, just it's such a deep roster right now.
Yeah.
It's just a tough spot for him, that's all.
Yeah, no, it is. But we have a new World Wrestling Federation European champion, and it is Perry Saturn. All right. Edge and Christian, your tag team champions, feel they have pulled the wool over Commissioner Mick Foley's eyes, and so they are packing and giggling and ready to leave and get away with having to do anything. But, of course, Foley walks in on them.
The
jig is up. I knew you pulled the wool over my eyes. You will be in your tag title match.
I'm surprised they didn't bust out fucking GTV for this again. They used it for everything else. All the
time. I know, exactly. And he says, your tag title match is back on, and we will tell you who that opponent is in a moment, because it's our next match. But in the first of what would be many backstage skits involving these two. Now, earlier on, The Undertaker had arrived at the arena on his bike, and his opponent on this evening, your boy, save the tune for later, Kurt Angle, was standing in the hallway as Taker was pulling in. So to drive Kurt nuts, Taker decided to drive his bike through the hallways of the backstage reunion arena, barricaded him in a dressing room, and almost ran him over, and Kurt had to run away. Get used to that, because you'll see a lot of that leading up to our match later on. So anyway, we fast forward to now. Michael Cole is interviewing the dead man. I actually can't call him that now, the badass or whatever. And on the monitor, he literally shoves Cole out of the way like he's going to throw him through the fucking side of the logo.
Yeah, yeah.
And Kurt is sitting on his bike. They show a through the monitor of him sitting on his bike. So Taker, of course, runs after him, and Kurt runs away. I thought he broke something off the bike, but he actually doesn't. I thought he did, but he doesn't. So there you go. More hijinks with Kurt and The Undertaker heading into their match later on this evening. I've got a lot to say about this whole thing.
Okay.
And I know you do as well, and we'll get to that a little bit later. Now it is time for the our next title match of the evening, World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Championships. Finally will happen. Sorry, Edge and Christian, you could not puke your way out of it. And now we'll tell you the opponent, JR, and there's a good reason why Edge and Christian were trying to duck their way out of this match. Because who are they facing? They're facing them.
The Acolytes, or otherwise known as the APA. For weeks, Acolytes have been in line for a tag title shot, but every time they got it, Edge or Christian would feign an illness or an injury and get things changed to a singles match. Singles matches rule, that's what they kept saying. On the 720 SmackDown, Edge and Christian spent the whole show trash-talking the APA from J&B's pub. Well, once Warrior finally got back to Bradshaw and Farouk, they headed straight to the pub. By the time they arrived, Edge and Christian were gone. Pissed that they were late, the APA proceeded to start a huge bar fight and tear the place down anyway. And that was triggered because Edge and Christian had been buying drinks for these other two guys and basically gave them the heads up about the Acolytes when they came. So they got in their faces and said, this is for, you know, Edge and Christian or whatever, and they had a big brawl. After that, the Acolytes were leaving, and Edge and Christian were hiding behind a fence. They jumped out, beat the crap out of them, and left them laying, and then drove off in the car. So I like that they were making Edge and Christian, you know, they weren't just like goofs. They were actually booked like very smartly and very sneaky.
Mm-hmm.
Always plotting, always planning, and using, you know, they knew they were outmanned, but they used it to their advantage here. It reminded me a lot of like kind of older heels, like the Rougeaus or teams like that, that were very,
right.
Very sneaky with how they went about things. They knew they were outsized, but they were able to always sneak out with the titles and escape because they just kind of outsmarted their opponents.
Mm. Yes. They just matured over these since they won the belts in Anaheim in April. They feel that their characters definitely grew. They fell into the comedy role, but at the same time, when they needed to, they kind of, they were legitimately trying to be smarter than you, not just being goofy, and they pulled it off in this feud. The match, I was hoping for a little bit more. It was only 5.5 minutes. The APA, first of all, Bradshaw goes on that awesome rant about the city of Dallas and the Super Bowl rings and everything, and I had forgotten about that, and it was pretty cool. But then the brawl on the outside, they're just killing each other, and Edge and Chris are getting, to use an JR-ism, mollywomped.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, as they're getting beat up in the ring, out of nowhere, Christian brings in a belt, whacks Bradshaw, and I'm sorry, he whacks Farouk, and gets the intentional DQ. So Edge hits Farouk with the belt, with the ref there, and gets the disqualification.
Did you like that?
No, I didn't. I thought it was dumb. I mean, it made sense for the two of them, but I was hoping for at least another 4 or 5 minutes out of the match, you know. I just felt like it was too short. So let me rephrase that. I didn't mind the ending. I just thought it ended too quickly.
So you didn't think Edge and Christian should have just went over?
Nah, I think it keeps the Acolytes somewhat strong for future opportunities because I think they need to keep the tag division a little open. You don't want to bury anybody yet, totally.
And I don't think it would have been burying. I mean, losing a title match to champions, I mean, is never burying.
No, no, that's true. But at the same time, I think in this specific instance, I think it helps keep Edge and Christian's motive hot, that they're sneaky little shits who will do anything to not get their ass kicked.
And you're right. And it played off the story well. That was the whole build, was that they kept trying to elude and avoid the APA, and they finally just were able to do it here, and the Acolytes were basically blew their title match.
Right. Yeah, they did. So the Acolytes win by DQ, so maybe they were entitled to a future title match. But
and we'll mention Edge and Christian a little bit later, too, because they were involved in a little burgeoning stable that was really cool.
Yes.
And involved in a much meatier storyline than this thing.
Yes, I agree. So Edge and Christian lose by DQ, but retain their World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Championships. Next up, another title match. And this one really was built up well. I liked the two guys. I liked the storyline. And I liked the fact they added a gimmick to it. We mentioned that Rikishi, of course, was your World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Champion. Speaking of Intercontinental Champion, of course, one of the greatest of all time right there. And he, of course, lost the King of the Ring final to Kurt Angle. But he still had the IC title until the July 6th SmackDown. What happened, JR?
On that date, Val Venus challenged Rikishi for the IC title. And thanks to the help of a Taz camera shot to the head, Val beat Rikishi for the gold. After a few more attacks on various shows, Val revealed his reasoning for attacking Rikishi. Kevin Kelly, our good friend, was with Trish Stratus' stable. And somehow, that turns into why Rikishi. Val says, you know something, Rikishi represents everything I used to be, doing everything in his power to please the fans, dancing at the drop of a hat just for the cheers of the fans. I used to gyrate for the cheers, giving competitors stinky faces just for the cheers of the fans. I used to come up with clever sexual innuendos just for the cheers of the fans. And yet I did nothing for me, and that made me sick. Well, buddy old pal, things have changed, and those days of uttering those words, hello ladies, have gone by the wayside. Gold has come waste side, and come this Sunday, Philly Lord, I promise you this, I will not be a hard man to find. I will be dead square in the middle of the ring, surrounded by a steel cage, waiting for the cheers of the fans to turn to sorrow. As they beat Rikishi within an inch of his damn life, and I will not be doing it for the fans, I will be doing it for me. So kind of a come-to-Jesus promo by Val here. Kind of almost a breakthrough statement for him for the first time in a while. Something that wasn't kind of goofy or milquetoasty. This is really kind of setting himself up to be a legit player. And I liked the dynamic of Trish. Now he's cut his hair finally, got some new tights. He's got the workout music going, instead of the old song. Kind of song. And I liked him. He's kind of just more of a badass. I liked this change a lot at the time, and I like it still now.
Well, at this point in 2000, we needed to kind of tone down the goofy early Attitude Era gimmicks.
And not even just that. I think he was just stale. I think he needed the change. Even if they weren't toning down those gimmicks in general, I think he needed it anyway.
Mm-hmm. He was one that definitely needed to not do it anymore. Right. And, you know, unlike a lot of those kind of gimmicks where, you know, the gimmick itself kind of hides the fact that maybe a wrestler's not as savvy in the ring. Very different with Val Venus. We knew Val was a very good wrestler. So to kind of strip him down to bare bones and say, look, I had the IC title for a cup of coffee, and I was, you know, the European champion or that kind of I needed it to be about me. I'm tired of, you know, it became a typical face-turning heel crutch of, I'm tired of entertaining you and not worrying about myself.
Right.
We've heard that a lot over the next 10 years or 13 years, and he uses it here. I'm tired. You know, Rikishi wants to dance for you and rub his ass.
But it made sense here with Val because it was such a change, and that really was his whole thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. And so he's like, look, I'm out for me now. Cut my hair, enough of the silly tights and the goofy one-liners and gyrating my hips, and Val Venus rhymes with nothing. It rhymes with winning.
It rhymes with penis still.
He doesn't care if it rhymes with penis.
Well, he
wants to win.
It does.
Yeah, well. Val Venus rhymes with Intercontinental Champion. That's what he said. And
Val Venus, it rhymes with penis.
And it rhymes with Intercontinental Champion. Well, it doesn't rhyme penis. But anyway, he wants to get Rikishi, and Rikishi wants a piece of him. So guess what? No interference by Taz. No nonsense. We will settle it in a steel cage.
Mm-hmm.
Were you surprised that, well, maybe not for the Attitude Era, but were you surprised that they actually put a cage in this match?
Yeah, for a few reasons. One, I feel like we haven't had just a cage match in a while that wasn't like a cell. And it was cool because it kind of fit. It was like had been kind of a blood feud. And yeah, it was neat. It definitely came out of nowhere. You wouldn't have expected it for this match. And they do a good job building it, making it seem important to keep interference out. And, you know, not only Taz, but also the rest of Trisha's stable, TNA, and everything. So I liked it. I thought it was good, and obviously led to a great moment during the match when actually, it was after the match, right? Val had already won when that happened.
Yes. Yes, it did. I want to confirm that here. Let's see. Just backtracking a little bit.
Actually, no, it was during the match.
It was during the match. Yeah. Yep, I just caught it too. Yep, it was during the match.
Yep, Rikishi goes up to the top of the cage.
Mm-hmm.
Does the Superfly splash, does the I love you hand signals, looks to the sky, and then dives off with a splash onto Val in a really cool spot. It was great, too, because Rikishi was bleeding, so his head was bloody, and it was just really, really cool looking. It was a neat spot, and it really made Rikishi look like a badass. He couldn't recover in time to cover Val for the pin. Taz does end up coming out, gets into the cage, hits Rikishi with a TV camera. Val takes advantage and gets the pin. So really, again, continuing the Taz build as an asshole, and also really putting over Rikishi as a badass and Val, too, for surviving it. So I thought this is a match. You know, we talked about King of the Ring, how no one looks strong coming out of that. To me, everyone looks strong coming out of this match. Rikishi looked like a crazed animal. Val looked gutty for surviving, and Taz looked like a good asshole. So I liked this match a lot. I think it's kind of a forgotten classic. And they go almost 15 minutes in the cage.
Mm-hmm.
And they had pretty good chemistry, these two.
If you look back, it's probably... I mean, there's a couple of other instances, but it might be the best Intercontinental title match of the year, and maybe in the last couple of years. I feel like they really legitimized the belt again. Not that, you know, Benoit or Jericho, who had earlier in the year, didn't, but those guys were already established. The Intercontinental title just kind of welded them together. Here, I think the belts were needed to – the title was – really used for what a belt is supposed to be, which is put guys over, both face and heel, and I think it worked for both of them. So a fantastic job of booking here for Val and for Rikishi and for the Intercontinental title in general, because a lot of people say, you know, this is one of those examples that kind of debunked the theory that the titles meant squat in the Attitude Era, because I think the Intercontinental title really got legitimized in 2000. I think this feud was a big reason why, particularly with the whole, you know, I remember late 99 with China sharing it and all that other jazz and...
Mm-hmm. It's come a long way. Really made it look pretty special. And again, that Rikishi would go to these lengths for the IC title and for revenge, but for the IC title to dive off a cage like that in a crazy, crazy spot. So really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All right. Now, we go backstage and Triple H wants to know where these flowers are coming from. He doesn't say where's Kurt Angle. He says he wants to know where these flowers are coming from. So Harvey Whippleman, our man Bruno, says, I'll take you to the room where all the flowers are coming from that Stephanie's getting. So they walk down
the hallway. If you want to know what the place to be.
Yeah. No, neither you nor I were in there, that's for sure. Well, I could have, but anyway. So they go to the door, and Triple H says, I'm going to take care of Kurt Angle right now. And he opens the door, the door closes, and you hear a lot of banging and yelling and banging and yelling.
Ooh. Are you getting excited?
Yeah, wait, I wasn't in there. What? No.
You hear all kind of banging and yelling and banging and yelling. And then the door opens. And a single rose falls out into the hallway.
What?
Oh, hey, don't come in here. A lot of banging and yelling going on. Playing the game.
Shh. What's going on? Hardcore title? What? No. So the door opens, and Chris Jericho walks out, and Triple H is laid out on the ground. That's what you get, bitch, or something like that, Jericho says, and he walks out. So, of course, our man Bruno shits his pants, thinking Triple H is going to think he set him up, so he runs off like a scalded dog. So there you go. Now, this was weird. Out comes Shane McMahon. who is kind of manager of the number one contender for the WWF Championship. We'll tell you who that is in a little while. Actually, we'll tell you who that is in a moment. Comes out, and out of nowhere, he doesn't want to be construed, and he said this to the fans in Dallas, I don't want to be construed as a pussy. That's what he said. I don't want to be, as you say around here, a pussy.
I'm going to have to redo the open now.
So,
I don't want to be construed as a pussy, Scott. I know that much. You think Tony Romo said that last night?
Hell no. Couldn't breathe. Ribs were probably touching.
That's what I'm saying. That's why he manned up. Said, I don't want to be construed as a pussy.
That's right. And he did. And won a game. Giant fans crying. I'll get to that on Wednesday.
Don't you construe me as no pussy.
Right. So Shane challenges your World Wrestling Federation champion, as Vince would call him, The Rock, to a impromptu non-title match right then and there. Well, the music cranks. Out comes your World Wrestling Federation champion. And they start jaw-jacking in the ring. And then all of a sudden, they go to the Titantron, and there is your number one contender.
Yes, your cunt is in the sink.
No, he wasn't the number one contender. He might have been the number one contender for something in the late 80s, in some territory somewhere. But he was not the number one contender here. It was Head Radical, Chris Benoit.
Head Radical.
Head Radical. We'll tell you how he became number one contender in a little bit. He's at The Rock's locker and proceeds to jaw jack Rock from there and rip up all the stuff and trash his locker. So, which I thought was kind of childish, but hey, time it's kind of stupid, but it was a time filler anyway.
Well, the whole Rock is known for his clothes, you know.
Yes, that is true too.
It's not the clothes that make the man, Scott.
Unless, of course. Well, I was going to mention somebody, but I will not. Yes, the clothes do make the man.
I don't do any tricks.
When it's a pink polo with a cockroach on the side.
But I just jump.
I just jump all over your locker. So.
I shred your shirts. I take your pants.
Yep.
You never know when that next call is going to come.
You take your pants. Take my shorts and take my aunt to Sizzler so I can't be at Terry Funk's show.
I stay fit. I watch what I eat.
Come on, Dennis.
So there you go. So they're a little more fuel to the fire of our World Wrestling Federation.
Because I never know when my next match is going to be.
It certainly isn't here. Yeah. So your World Wrestling Federation Championship match, a little extra juice added to it as we move on.
Oh, there's a lot of juice in that match.
Yes, yeah. oh, that's terrible. That was terrible. I didn't say it was wrong. I just said it was terrible. All right. No juice in this match. Not yet, anyway.
Yeah.
We finally come to, now all throughout the night, these two have been backstage, and we've had like seven backstage moments leading up to this match, and it's finally here.
Yeah.
Close your eyes and dream, and you can be with me.
So I was in a locker room. You were in a cave of owls.
Okay? I Love Everything by Gwen Stefani.
That's it's not Gwen Stefani.
I want to give you credit, by the way. I don't know if you took classes or if maybe you're juicing. You've been very funny on the internet lately, very quick, and that was impressive. There, you nailed the song. It was loud. It was clear. It was on time.
The record didn't skip.
Something's going on. I don't know.
You know what it is? Red water.
Yes.
Anyway, I won.
I rarely laugh when you write things online, but the last like 2 weeks, I found myself giggling at a lot of things you posted. So.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, you've been hot lately.
Thank you. I've been catching conversations at the right moment. Usually, I catch them about 2 hours too late, but I've been lucky. I've been looking out this time.
Yeah.
All right. So your boy, while you're in the Cave of Owls, Kurt Angle.
I don't know what that means, but
I don't know. It's in the song. By the way, for those that are not old, that aren't older than me, which is 85% of the listening audience, that's not Gwen Stefani. That's Rita Coolidge.
Oh right, Calvin Coolidge's wife.
Yes, 1978. She had long hair. Or was that
Calvin Coolidge? What a forgettable president.
Yeah, he was right nestled there in between Warren Harding and Herbert Hoover. Mm. So,
invented the vacuum cleaner, Herbert Hoover. So he became president.
That's right. And then he couldn't sell them anymore, and the crash happened, and that's when Roosevelt became president.
He got polio, and he gave that to JFK, who died from it.
what? No. He gave it to JFK. Was like 8 when that happened. All right. Anyway, well, that's right, because his father was bootlegging liquor, so they probably drank some moonshine, and everything was fine.
And that's how Bush became president.
Well, no. Bush was at Yale playing. Bush was at Yale playing baseball.
Coke. Doing lines with Vince at some fucking club.
Okay, there, Billy Jack. All right. I know you hate this match, but can we get to it, please?
Yes.
All right. Kurt Angle, who has been dogging the Undertaker all night, takes on the Dead Man here, or the Badass, whatever the hell you want to call him. All right, JR, how did this begin?
Ah!
Together. How?
July 3rd, Kurt Angle assisted his buddies Edge and Christian in a tag team match against Kane and the Undertaker. Just as Taker was about to unleash a chokeslam, Kurt ran out, pummeled Taker in the knee with a scepter, and led to a DQ. Taker was furious, and Angle was running scared. On 7/10 Raw, Angle confronted Undertaker during a promo and told him he had a surprise. Moments later, he reemerged from the back with a ridiculous helmet, pair of goggles, riding on a little motor scooter. He claimed he wanted to apologize to Taker by giving him this present so they can get rid of his enormous gas-guzzling hog. Kurt took a lap around the ring, ensuring we all saw Undertaker stenciled in the side. Taker had enough, chased Kurt off, and threw the scooter off the stage to the floor. Angle dropped a cane on 7/13 SmackDown, and Taker got the rub there. On 7/20 SmackDown, Kurt managed to dump some weird substance on Taker's bike, and we arrived backstage. Kurt jumped up from behind and hit him in the knee with a wrench. So the knee was really the focus here from Kurt. He kept targeting it whenever he could with various weapons and really just abusing Taker's bike. And I thought this was funny because Kurt kept apologizing all the time. And there was, like, you know, obviously mock apologies. He'd apologize and then be an asshole. So
right.
A lot of passive aggressiveness out of Kurt and a lot of anger from Taker really doing the, I don't know. I know Kevin really liked the American Badass. I like the idea of it, but this part of the Badass character I hated.
The whole
oh, look at this, you know, little fucking scamp playing in my yard. Blah, blah, blah. You know, like, I just hated that. I just wanted him to be, like, a badass asshole. I don't want him to be this, like, grumpy old man. Like, that's what he was in this gimmick, like a grumpy old man that was too good for everyone. It was just an odd booking choice for Taker.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And to be honest with you, we'll get more into my theory on this whole beginning of this new gimmick. Now, they booked this thing as a triple main event. This was supposed to be one of the three big matches of the night. We already know what one is, the title match, and then we'll get to the other one in a minute, after the break. So this was supposed to be like a legit main event match, a match that you were wanted to, you know, there were some that probably didn't care about the other two and paid the $35, which I think is what it was in 2000, for this match.
Oh,
and
this
was booked
these,
as such.
The show was booked on these three matches. Like, those were the big draws of this show, no doubt. It's definitely these three coming up, the main events.
And this was one of them. So this was not supposed to be treated as an undercard piece of crap.
No.
Well, it was.
It was a big pile of fucking horse shit.
Yeah, it was a big pile of red water. You know, Kurt got a couple of kicks in, but Taker just threw him around and then hit his new finisher because...
Well, no, but the worst part is he fucking had him beat, and then he picks him up. Like, it wasn't enough. He had him beat, like, 2 minutes in, and then fucking picks him up. And the whole like, setting of this pay-per-view was, like, these guys breaking through the glass ceiling. Like, can these guys knock off the old guard? And this was the first test, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm fine, all right? You don't want to put Kurt over here. You can say maybe he's got enough heat, but... I mean, Kurt had more going for him than Taker did at this point. Kurt was in a real burgeoning feud with Triple H that we'll get to.
Yep.
He had a lot going on, and Taker really didn't. Taker could have put him over or won by DQ, maybe Kane and Edge and Christian get involved in something. I mean, he literally just squashed him.
Mm-hmm.
And you can say, yeah, Kurt got the better of him for a lot of the weeks, and they were building to that, but it's like... It just didn't make sense to me. I don't get why Kurt couldn't get offense and look like a threat. I don't know why they had to completely bury him here. It was counterproductive to everything. Kurt just looked like shit coming out of this match. And he was the one that arguably had the biggest future ahead over the next couple months.
Clearly. All right. I'm going to talk. This is two pronged for me, and I thought long about this today while we were doing pre-production for this for the vault. This began a trend of something that I've noticed, and I know you have as well, and we've talked about it often over the last couple years with the current product. Whenever it seems like an up-and-comer, somebody that's just come into the promotion but got red-hot immediately, feels like they're on the verge of something big, the company feels the need to knock him down a peg. Whether
see,
it's
this for, is one this is one I didn't understand though. I'll let you finish.
I agree.
I'm sorry, but this
I
one
agree.
I didn't understand because it wasn't a WCW guy. It wasn't a guy from another promotion. I mean, this was their guy,
right?
Ugh.
And now in the modern day, it's more associated with somebody that has the Money in the Bank briefcase. Obviously, we won't talk about that for at least another 5 years. But in the modern day, it's like that now. Damian Sandow now, Jack Swagger. Definitely Daniel Bryan, definitely Dolph Ziggler. It seems like these guys have it. They know the fans like them, and they know the fans want to see them explode. But you just got to – it's almost like the company's like, yeah, but we're calling the shots here. We'll decide what's going to happen to these guys. So knowing that Kurt was a beast, they needed to prove that, look, you may think he's ready to explode. But the fact of the matter is he's still a little fish in a big pond. And we're going to make sure he's still known as the little fish. And they do that constantly now. Now, back then, it was tougher because you didn't have the Money in the Bank to lean on. Or the Money in the Bank as the label for the newcomer guy. Now, the only guy in the last 10 years that was in this position and didn't have to get knocked down a peg was Brock Lesnar. Yes, he lost the title at one point, but in his run in WWF, when he came up from scratch to when he left the first time, he never had to do this. Never. But this is the first real instance of a guy who everybody loves, fans, including you, JR, and our good friend Charlie, and the rest of the Greyhound crew, who were big Kurt guys. You guys were getting too excited. And the company needed to make sure, you know, this guy's still young and still in the pond. You know, small fish, big ocean. And they had to make sure of that. And that's why I think they did that. I'm not saying it's right. Clearly not right. But that's your reason, in my opinion. And I think they also try to do it because they think you'll get a false sense of security that, oh, I guess he's going to stay in the mid-card, and all right, whatever, and then we'll see what happens. You know, obviously, we know what happens a few months from now, but I think that's why they do that.
But he wasn't just, like, coming up at this point right now. He was already lined up for, like, a major feud, like, in the weeks after the show, like, starting the next night, you know what I mean? Like, it is, to me, it was just stupid. Like, it made no sense to have him job out here the way he did. If you want to give him a competitive loss, if you really want Taker to win, fine. Mm-hmm. But it didn't need to be a squash like this. It made no sense to kill Angle like this completely. Mm-hmm. I mean, you want to say the Big Show thing, a backlash, that's one thing. Fine. That was a comedy match. Kurt wasn't really on the verge of anything major at that point. But, I mean, this just really defied all logic.
Mm-hmm. I know.
It really did. It really made no sense.
So it was two-pronged. It was to show Kurt, yeah, you think you're hot and special, but just remember where you are. And where you are at this moment, and to show the fans,
I no one cared about Taker. You know, it's like
I agree. Now,
I mean, he was over, but he didn't need this win, or he didn't need to squash Kurt Angle here. Why? What did that gain?
Right. Now, on the Taker side of the coin, we will comment often about him between now and what late November of next year. For the first time, now, for the entire decade of the 90s, well, maybe not early on, but at least by like 95, Taker's, we talk about political stroke and maneuvering and things like that. And Taker never, you never read anywhere about Taker having to do that. Because his gimmick almost was politically built in. Oh, Taker's the dead man. He can't lose here. we'll do something during Raw, but when it comes to brass tacks, he's got to win. And everybody be like, oh, yeah, I guess you're right. But now, yeah, you know, I don't want to be the dead man anymore. I want to be somebody different. Ah, great. No problem, Taker. But now you're mortal.
Right.
It's almost like Superman with kryptonite. Now you're just a normal badass dude with a long, but you're not invincible. You're not the dead man. So now it's like, well, now I can actually lose matches legit. Now, Mania, the streak was nothing to talk about yet. So we won't get into that aspect of it. But just in regular, you know, wow, I'm going to get beat up more. You know, I'm going to lose more matches because now the whole invincibility thing is gone. The urn and the music and the smoke and the lights and all that stuff. That's all gone now. Now I'm just some dude with a leather jacket. Yeah, I'm the Undertaker, but I'm not the Undertaker. So now I have to do a little, you know, I don't want to be buried as an old man. You said it yourself, JR. He didn't act like a badass dude, you know, who rides a bike. He's like this grumpy old fuck who comes back and is like, who are these whippersnappers taking my spot?
Yep.
It really almost was like art imitating life.
Yeah.
And now he does have to maneuver. And for the first time in his career, we started to hear the...
Mm-hmm.
Not as bad now. It really gets bad in 2001.
Yeah.
And we'll document it when we get there. But even to this point, he definitely was a little threatened, my opinion. And I think that's why this happened. For the first time, he had to actually use legit stroke, not the gimmick stroke. But now, like, he had to say, look, I'm not jobbing to this bum. Why don't we do this? Why don't we make him look funny and giggly and cool, and then I'll just, you know. He'll be back. He'll be back. He's hot enough. He'll be back. He pulled a Hogan.
What the hell is this shit?
That's pretty much what he called Kurt when he came back.
It was stupid. I mean, it was dumb. It just made no sense. He really did not need the win, especially
Why did he have to lose to Kane on that SmackDown?
Yeah, that made no sense either.
What's the point of that, too?
Kane was not... I mean, his bloom had dulled really quickly as well.
Yeah, and, fell off.
Yeah. It really just was an odd choice, and I don't... it's just crap. I mean, it really is. Angle was really on the rise. And for Taker just to kill him off like this made no sense. It was a waste of pay-per-view time. It was a waste of a feud. Angle gained nothing. He didn't look like a guy who could hang. It was like the Kidman-Hogan stuff that was going on around the same time in WCW.
Yep.
Everyone was like, oh, Kidman's working with Hogan. Oh, what a great job Hogan's doing. And he never fucking did anything. You know, Hogan just beat him every turn. And when Kidman did win, it was like all, you know, interference and everything. And Kurt just looked like a jobber here. He looked like a cruiserweight they brought up and just got squashed.
Yep. It's sad. And you made a good point in your comments. Here's a guy who really became a beacon of respect during the real down dip in the 90s and was looked upon as like a guy that, you know, you didn't want to mess with. And now all of a sudden it's like, well, I guess you are just like every other asshole that's been in a business this long. I thought you were different. And it took some time to reverse that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we'll get there. But this was a down moment. And the rest of this stretch is a down moment for Taker. It's unfortunate. You don't want to see that. But just like the gimmick, he as a person is not invincible.
Right.
He's fallible just like any other old school wrestler who wants to make sure his spot's still there. So Kurt Angle eats crow, sadly. It was depressing. It was a bummer. I thought it was a downer to the show.
Mm-hmm.
It was definitely a downer to the show.
I was definitely pissed at the time.
Yeah, and we still got two huge matches left. But JR and I will calm our vitriol and get back in happy thoughts. We have two matches left. We got an awesome gimmick match, one of my favorite gimmicks of all time. It's been beaten to death the last couple of years, but here it was great. And, of course, our main event for the World Wrestling Federation Championship. Fully Loaded 2000 here on Place to Be Podcast, episode 251. But first, we need to pay some bills. Because...
he's going to win the Royal Rumble! Yeah, the British Bulldog has got a history in Royal Rumbles. And tonight, I'm going to remake history by winning this night's Royal Rumble. Tonight, because I'm bizarre!
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What I'd like to have right now...
Chad, do you ever feel that the world revolves around WWF?
I think you mean WWE there, Barf.
Yeah, whatever, but what about David Crockett?
Well, what about Jimmy Valiant?
I'm gonna get you all until I get you, Paul Jones. Ooh.
The Four Horsemen.
We are a family, and we are the best.
The Omni, the Dangerous Alliance.
Please welcome the newest members of the Dangerous Alliance, Arn Anderson and Larry Zbysko.
Jim Cornette and the Midnight Express.
The Fantastics are putting the U.S. Tag Team title on the line against the Midnight Express.
Main events with actual work rate in them.
Woo! 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 All right!
It's just not fair to Flair.
It's not fair for Flair.
If this is what you're looking for, please check out Where the Big Boys Play podcast, the only pure NWA and WCW supercard podcast out there.
While you were in Hollywood making movies, Thunder Lips, I was winning world titles.
Well, there they are, our good friends Chad and Parr, Where the Big Boys Play. Now, if you want nonstop old school NWA discussion, getting back to that very first Starrcade, these guys have it covered. Even the PICs have made an appearance once. We are very particular what podcasts we visit. So check out our friends Chad and Parr, Where the Big Boys Play. Their link is right on our site, placetobenation.com. Just go into the podcast menu. And there they are, the other great shows we partner with. Chad and Parr, working Where the Big Boys Play. Speaking of Place to Be Nation, that's your everyday home for your pop culture needs. At placetobenation.com, we have everything. Wrestling, sports, comics, even polls. We want your opinions as well. Every day there's something different with our top staff of writers who are experts in all fields of pop culture. From the weekly Raw review to the return of the hack, we've got everything you need. We're also working with a myriad of great podcasts, of course, besides Chad and Parr. We have Grapple Talk, the Fans Podcast, Off the Top Rope, Answering the 10 Count, We Found New Music, and the Kings of Sport with Nate Milton. We've got everything for your listening pleasure. So check us out every day of the week at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Now, don't forget about our good friend Graham Cawthon and the history of WWE.com. He's still the top source for all argument solvers, from match results to house show cards to pay-per-view histories. Any questions you need answered, any debates among wrestling fans that need ending, head over to Graham's treasure trove of information. You will certainly find it. Need to know what the opener of Starrcade 1995 was? What was the main event of that 1988 Boston Garden house show you went to when you were 11 years old? Graham can tell you. He has WWE, WCW, ECW results, and the growing results in TNA and Ring of Honor. So for all your wrestling research needs, check out Graham Cawthon at thehistoryofwwe.com. Now finally, if you want a place to just hang out, discuss all things wrestling with fellow diehard fans, check out the news and the great forums at twfnews.com. They have all the up-to-the-minute stories in WWE, TNA, and pretty much everywhere in between. They talk old school, Attitude Era, and even those hard-to-remember guys and shows like Waylon Mercy or In Your House Number 3. So check out all there is to see right on twfnews.com.
This is legendary ring announcer and WWE Hall of Famer, the Think, Howard Finkel. And you're listening to the Place to Be podcast.
All right, Nation, we are back here on the Place to Be podcast, chatting Fully Loaded 2000. Scott, let's quickly just talk about placetobenation.com.
Mm-hmm.
A really cool article up today for you wrestling fans. Blink and you missed them. WWE's Most Forgettable Developmental Stars by Dustin Nichols, a new writer on the site. Kind of looks at guys that came up through developmental, had a cup of coffee, and vanished immediately, and you forgot. I didn't even remember half the guys you talked about. So pretty cool there. Jeremy Nichols' House of Horror is up as well. My Ring of Honor recap, a new episode of Where the Big Boys Play, Wrestle War 90. They're closing in on episode 50 there. Parv and Chad welcomed Charles back into the fold as well. Of course, we had Andrew Reich took a look at the Basketball Hall of Fame preview for the induction class there that's going to be going in. Wrestling with the Past, great show. Will and Charles looked at the history of the NWA WCW World TV title. And that kind of, you know, plays into one of our five-count themes coming up next week. It's Night of Champions month, of course, so a lot of title stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All your podcasts are there, Off the Top Rope, Answering the 10-Count, Grapple Talk. In addition, the Doctor Who series, we had a piece up by Lita Clark and by Parv up over the weekend. Good stuff there. Matt Petticord has a SmackDown review for you if you missed it. And a series of articles I wanted to call out quickly just from last Friday. Jordan Duncan had a phenomenal piece the continuation of his All the People You'll Meet series. Of course, he had previously done Little League Parents, and now he did Internet Wrestling Community Edition, Part 1. So he went through and all the different types of people you run into online and wrestling boards and forums and blogs, and you could probably figure out a few of them.
That's pretty dangerous, but
probably figure out a couple of the inspirations if you read it. A Blind Eye to the Blind Tag by Chad Campbell kind of goes through the evolution of tag team wrestling in the WWF versus kind of the format in the NWA and WCW, how who focused more on tag wrestling, and he kind of started it as an examination of Demolition's title reign and kind of veered off from there once he really got into things. So pretty cool. And then, Scott, I had a piece up on the first Raw I ever went to. Kind of coincided with me starting freshman year of college. Yep. It was this week 15 years ago. It was the low of Raw. And it's a pretty couple of pretty cool stories. I told them here, I think, on the show before, too. But I go more in-depth in the written version. So if you want to check that out as well. And finally, Callum Leslie rebooked the whole Bound for Glory series. A good piece there, too.
Yeah,
and of course, all the regular columns, Hard Traveling Fanboys, Weber Has Issues, weekly NFL Power Rankings here every Thursday morning. We have members of the staff will be out there giving you those ranks. Kings of Sport podcast. I had a good episode last week, too. So a lot of podcasts. If you like podcasts, we are definitely the home for all of your options. Total Divas, watching Total Divas, episode 7 will be up this week as well. So check all that out. Also, you may notice on some of the articles are the Amazon links where you can click through and buy stuff. And hey, you know what? Help out Place TV Nation. If you're going to order something on Amazon anyway, go right through our website, placetvnation.com. Click through there and order and help us out too. So help keep all this content free for you guys, you know?
Precisely.
All right. So there is your placetvnation.com update, Scott. And we have two matches left here on Fully Loaded. So why don't we dive back in?
All right. This next one we've kind of alluded to already this evening. It is...
There's the candelabra. Scott's hiding behind it.
Where these flowers are cheap, I would buy lilies. No. So he's already ticked off tonight because of the Kurt Angle flowers.
He's pissed off a lot because he's in this feud, and he's also got Angle basically putting the moves on his wife over the last few weeks. So yeah, a lot of angst.
And the Kurt Angle is all over this show, but he's got a job in 7 minutes. Whatever. This goes back, of course, to April. Obviously, that infamous Penn State Raw where Chris Jericho seemingly won the World Wrestling Federation Championship from the game. But then, of course, Triple H used his masculine wiles and bullied Earl Hebner into reversing the decision because of the fast count. And then it kind of went on the back burner. Triple H went on his feud with The Rock. Jericho went on his feud with Chris Benoit. And then they kind of meandered their way back together. On the June 26th Raw, Triple H was in a triple threat number one contenders match for the title against Rock and Kurt Angle. Hunter had hit the pedigree on Angle, which was 3 seconds away from victory. Yeah, 3 seconds away. But then Chris Jericho ran down to the ring and interfered and cost Trips the match. Now, over the next few weeks, Trips, of course, pissed off, hunting down Jericho, demanding that new Commissioner Mick Foley give him what he wants. He wants Jericho's ass. He said that a lot.
Oh, he's pounding ass.
I didn't like it. What? Now, Foley would eventually make the match for the pay-per-view, but Triple H still wanted Jericho's ass. This was terrible writing. Who the hell booked this crap? So on the July 6th SmackDown, Foley told the game he could have Jericho on Raw. He could have Jericho's ass on if he won a handicap elimination match against three studs, legendary guys in the history of this business, JR. Who were those three guys?
Kai and Tai and the Brooklyn Brawler.
Now, Trips had eliminated Kai and Tai, but after interference from Jericho, guess who won the match?
The Brooklyn Brawler.
The biggest win in Steve Lombardi's career.
Yes.
After the match, he would get bloodied and pedigreed by the game. So there you go. There's your receipt. The week before the pay-per-view, a stipulation was added, JR. I believe it is the first time in history we have seen this stipulation. Yes, I believe so. No, second time.
Yep, second time. JR second even time. Called it out.
Yes, second time in history we would have this stipulation. The first time was in the World Wrestling Federation Championship match at the St. Valentine's Day Massacre between The Rock and Mankind. That stip is last man standing.
Yep. And Jericho requested the stip. Wanted to prove that he was tough. He could handle this kind of match, handle this kind of environment. Wanted to really make a name for himself and prove himself to Mick Foley. He just really wanted revenge, and he had all the stuff was in full force here with him mocking Stephanie, the trash bag hoe, and everything like that. So
yes.
Triple H really just wanted revenge for all the hell Jericho had been putting him through and harassing his wife, and he was still angry about the angle stuff too. So that was all kind of playing and kind of swarming, building up to him. So
yes. Now, The Rock, Mankind, Last Man Standing was good. The ending kind of soured it a little bit. This, however, I was kind of more anticipating this one, not just obviously because of Triple H, but because this was really, after the great feud with Benoit, this was really a good spot for Jericho.
Yeah.
Win or lose, it was a good spot for Jericho. Because did you feel that he was a main eventer at this point?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe not like a locked-in main eventer, but a guy that was believable in the main event.
Right.
Like, this didn't feel like a guy they were trying to shove into the main event. Like, it felt like he fit.
Right. This match is awesome. I think Triple H knew that Jericho could handle the rigors and the violence of this match because of, you know, what he went through in Japan, Mexico, ECW, you know, WCW, you know, Thrill Seekers. So he knew violence was nothing unfamiliar to Jericho, and Triple H had just had a brutal, the brutal Iron Man with Rock at Judgment Day, and he's, you know, obviously the matches with Foley at the beginning of the year. So you had a great combination of two guys who didn't need to hold back.
Right.
You know, Rock was still a little green when he was facing Mick in that one at the Massacre. He wasn't quite ready to really jump into that violence foray yet. But these two guys, very different. And they go all out. Bloody the shit out of each other. Definitely top five match of the year. Over 23 minutes. And just a great match. And they would wrestle each other again down the line, but I don't think it matches the brutality of this one. Just an unbelievable.
Yeah, this is an awesome match. It's definitely a hidden gem, a forgotten classic, whatever you want to say. They just beat the shit out of each other. Awesome bloody brawl. And a big difference. Yeah, I think this one gets kind of lumped in with the booking shenanigans of the other stuff, you know what I mean? Because everyone's pissed about Angle. And they're like, oh, here we go, Triple H. But I mean, Triple H, he was headed for a big feud, too, with Kurt Angle. And, you know, Jericho was made to look like a guy that could have barely won, could have hung in. He you know, Triple H gets up at the last second at the 10 count and then collapses. It was really made it like he won by a hair. And Jericho hung with him every step of the way. And to me, this match elevated Jericho. Made him look like a guy that could step into this forum and have a great match. I don't think he needed the win here.
Right.
And Angle, to me, was different. He looked like a fucking jackass in that match. Whereas Jericho goes 24 minutes with the guy who's been booked as really, and arguably the best guy in North America during this time frame, as far as like heavyweights go.
Right.
A guy that was well protected, and he went toe-to-toe with him. He looked like his equal and really hung in there and put on a great, awesome match. A big difference in the Angle thing. And again, I feel like this gets lumped in unfairly a lot of times.
I do too. And the next match almost is the same way, because you've had three matches. The triple main event all involves three guys elevated against three established guys, but all very different levels. And I think a lot of people couldn't look past that back then. And sadly, I think this match gets for two reasons. Triple H gets unfairly abused for, you know, burying, and Jericho almost is treated like oh, poor little Jericho. He doesn't want to be poor little Jericho. He wants to be a guy that's established. He wants to be a guy who's ready for the big time, and he doesn't want to be treated like, oh, poor little Jericho, he got screwed.
Right.
He doesn't want to be treated like that, and I think that's not fair to him either. So there's a few people I remember that were not thrilled, with what happened in that match. And again, they kind of took it, you know, kind of took it, a little too much. Now, I remember a lot of people thought that our man Scott Keith was one of them, one of our famed guests, being a big Canadian fan he is. But go back to his review. He did not slam this match at all. In fact, he was putting over Triple H big time.
Oh, yeah. Well, Triple H was great in this year. I mean, he really was. I think maybe people were a little bit tired of the overall idea. And everyone was a big Jericho fan and Angle, and the guy we're going to talk about in a few minutes, too. And I mean, I get what the angst was at this point because, you know, we had seen it happen in WCW where these guys were held back and not elevated. And a lot of people were looking to the future, and they were right, saying, hey, you need to give these guys wins because you can't always rely on, you know, Taker and Triple H and Rock. And that was, you know, borne out. That was proven over the next year. But Triple H at this point was still red hot in his prime, and Jericho wasn't made to look like a chump by any means. And at this point, Triple H was making everyone look good. You know, with Taka, Rikishi, the Brooklyn Brawler, you know, Mick Foley, everyone was in having good matches with him. So I was okay with this. It's an awesome, awesome match. I think Jericho looked phenomenal. The match itself was great. If you haven't seen it, definitely go check it out. It's if you can track it down. It's definitely online. So track it down. It's worth the watch. And they really just beat the piss out of each other. And it's a good storyline. And now Triple H is ready to move on to this other angle. And Jericho kind of turns back to a feud that he had been in earlier in the year.
Exactly. Close to 5 stars. I mean, we didn't grade quarters, but I could probably raise mine a quarter star. I mean, I made mine was 4.5, and I could easily make it actually, you graded this match higher than I did. I would definitely change my grade now. After watching it tonight, just a tremendous match. And Triple H winning does nothing to hurt Jericho. Speaking of established guys hurting new guys, we move on to our main event. The World Wrestling Federation Championship is on the line. And of course, earlier in the night, the champ had already come out to wrestle a supposed non-title match with Shane McMahon, but it was all just a ruse to keep his beloved fancy silk shirts with the big lion on the back and those other various ones that Rock used to wear so Chris Benoit could rip the crap out of him and dump his bag and, you know, destroy his pants and all that other jazz.
TB Nation, it is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan update.
I got my 2x4.
The real ass homeboy motherfucker Vincent Kennedy McMahon here with your Hacksaw Jim Duggan update. He didn't do jack shit in July of 2000. Chris Colo, how the fuck you been?
Oh, I've been awesome, VKM. How was your weekend?
I've been sitting outside the studio in my limo for the last month and a half. When the hell you don't do these shows? You're supposed to let me know.
Well, you know what?
I saw the lights come on, and I walked upstairs. That's how I knew what was going on.
Well, we've had a lot of great guests the last month.
So you have? Who are they?
We've had Scott Keith.
Who?
Scott Keith.
Is he a jobber from the AWA?
No.
Oh.
No.
I'm not interested.
Famed internet writer.
Made Parvin is whoever that guy that I listed on a stupid show last time.
Yeah, okay. Christopher Robin Zimmerman, CRZ.
That the dude that hung out with Winnie the Pooh?
No, that was just Christopher Robin.
But no, I just saw that movie the other day, Chris Colo. I'm going to book a whole fucking storyline around it.
Yep, CRZ. We've had some other great guests. We've had our trivia tournament. We've had a lot of work to go on the last month and a half. We've finally been able to...
That's it? These are all the guests you're talking about? A jobber and a cartoon character?
CRZ knows you, though, through Jesse the Ventura.
Who?
Minnesota Buds. Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Whatever. Minnesota Buds. So how was your weekend, VKM? What was going on?
It was fucking banging, motherfucker. Football's full effect. I saw the Los Angeles Extreme take on the Orlando Rage. I went down there live, me and Rod Perth, checking that shit out.
Wow.
TNN had all the games. Did you catch them all?
I did. What do you think of the New York, New Jersey Hitmen?
They look good. They look sharp. Tommy Maddox led the LA Extreme on a great drive.
That's right.
I want my football, Chris Colo.
You're all about football. Football, casinos, and restaurants.
That's it, baby. I heard Nails on your show talking shit about the Dirty F New York.
That's right, Nails did. Yeah, bad mouth it big time.
Asshole.
Food sucked. Yeah, bad.
I'll tell you what sucks is commentary on Ring of Honor. I don't know. That's what Maritella tells me. Anyway, Chris Cola, what show are you talking about tonight?
Fully Loaded 2000.
Who's on the cover of the tape? What's that one?
That was, well, the poster was of Steve Austin with a pair of dice, and then Steve Austin didn't show up.
Why not?
I don't know. You didn't bring him out.
Well, I didn't bring him out. What do you mean I didn't? I wasn't on the show, was I?
No, but.
Okay. Well, you're blaming me for.
Well, I mean.
Chris Cole, what else happened? Is this that show everyone bitches about?
Yeah, you keep down the Canadian guys.
Oh, yeah, everyone thinks I bury everyone, Chris Colo. I got a little song for these guys, okay? You know I like to dabble in the karaoke? You know I like to sing?
Mm-hmm.
Ah! A little song to sing towards these guys that think they're always buried by Vincent Kennedy McMahon Jr., the greatest wrestling promoter in history. I took wrestling out of the smoky bingo halls and brought it into mainstream arenas, Chris Colo.
Yes, you did. I agree.
Got the shit on E.
Mm-hmm.
Cranking.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this song I couldn't do alone, so I have a very special guest with me. My right-hand man in the Pussy Posse, Mr. Mark Clare. You with us?
BKM, what up, baby?
What up, baby?
Clare,
they're my man.
You're actually out of the limo. I see.
You don't have to talk to him if you don't want to, Clare. It's fine.
No, I mean, I'm still hungover from the Thirsty Turtle last night, but I'm ready to go.
Yeah, baby. What's the Thirsty Turtle? Is that chick you brought home?
What do you? We were there all night last night.
I don't remember shit about last night.
You never remember anything, Vince.
Oh, all right. Well, I hope Rotella put it in his journal. As long as Armento got us home. All right, listen. Are you ready, Claire? You've been practicing this song?
I was born ready, baby, BKM.
All right, Chris Colo. Here's a song dedicated to those losers at Fully Loaded 2000.
Okay.
Hang on.
I just taught him how to use the karaoke.
Phil, Claire.
Last night, so.
Can you fill for us? What did you think of the XFL yesterday?
Oh, yeah, that Maddox drive was huge.
Right?
I can't believe he's still going. How old is that guy?
I don't know. 20?
He's at least 20. If
all
I'm
right,
30.
I got it. You ready?
We're ready to go, baby.
All right, hit play, Rotella. Come on. Ooh, job.
No, you're never going to win it.
Oh.
Never, ever going to win it.
Not this time.
No, you're never going to win it.
My love.
Never, ever going to win it. No, you're never going to win it.
Oh.
Never, ever going to win it.
Fuck that bitch up.
No, you're never going to win it.
Fuck you, Jericho.
Never, ever going to win it.
Oh, job. I remember how it used to be. Jobbing on superstars as Herta Hurst Helmsley.
Ooh. Jump.
Now with the booking, we've made a change. The more you talk, the more things stay the same. What makes you think you can walk in here from Atlanta and win any sort of fight? I sit in gorilla, watch you make a fool of yourself. 'Cause you're wasting your time. Oh.
No, you're never gonna win it.
Not this time.
Never gonna win it.
My lovin'.
Oh, never gonna win it.
Bend that bitch over.
Never ever gonna win it. No, you're never gonna win it.
Fuck you, Armento.
Never ever gonna win it.
You stupid homely looking fucking motherfucker.
Never ever gonna win it.
Ooh, jump. Now I promise you the moon and stars. Save your shitty wrestling, it won't get you very far.
Ooh, job.
Give you a chance to make a change. But all the juice in the world can't get you taller than 5'8". It doesn't matter what you do or what you say.
Ooh, whoa, whoa.
The fans don't love you. No way. Maybe next time you'll give Undertaker a little respect.
Ooh, whoa.
So you won't be hearing him say, no way.
No, you're never gonna win it.
Not this time.
Never, ever gonna win it.
Look at the lights, bitch.
Oh, you're never gonna win it.
My son-in-law's the best.
Never, ever gonna win it.
Fuck you.
No, you're never gonna win it.
Doing lines of coke.
Never, ever gonna win it.
Fuck Robert Griffin.
No, you're never gonna win it.
And the fucking Baltimore Orioles.
Never, ever gonna win it.
I love Tommy Maddox. And the Orlando Rage. You all right, Claire?
No, you're never gonna win it. No, you're never gonna win it. Never, ever gonna win it. No, you're never gonna win it. Never, ever gonna win it.
Ooh, jump! Ooh, yes! I give it to the main eventers, and not the midgets. All right, that's right. Because you see, baby, when you're lacking, you're losing. And I'm out the door.
Oh, wow, wow.
It doesn't matter what you do or what you say.
Oh, wow.
Fans don't love you. No way.
Oh,
maybe next time you'll give The Undertaker a little respect. So you won't be hearing him say, no way. And now it's time for a breakdown.
Never gonna win it.
You are a fucking jobber, you stupid midget. Job. Undertaker, number one, bitch. All right, Claire, let's go. We're out of here. Get the Humvee. Rotello, let's go. Put the wig back on. I want you to keep dancing until the breakdown's done. All right, Claire, we're out of here. Say bye.
Peace.
Sure looks to get down.
I thought there was more Ciroc in the back seat than there usually was. Holy shit. Nice job by Claire there, getting a little falsetto.
Seems better
action
than you.
I don't know. That was pretty good, but I don't know. Me and Giante, I'm going to take that to my grave. I thought that was pretty good. But that was very impressive. Poor midgets. At least JR and I have the same opinion, or at least Vince and I have the same opinion of midgets anyway. All right. Your World Wrestling Federation Championship. I can't believe you actually let Claire out of the car. I haven't seen Claire in ages. He looks good. Usually leaves him in the front seat. The Rock, of course, earlier tonight had come out, faked out by one Shane McMahon while Chris Benoit destroyed his locker. And now Chris Benoit wants to destroy him and become the World Wrestling Federation Champion. To shatter the glass ceiling for all mid-card midgets out there, at least in Vince's eyes. But JR, what were your thoughts on Shane at this point? Kind of has the stage to himself. Vince has kind of vanished after what happened at King of the Ring. And instead of it being temporary, I felt it was kind of permanent. Not permanent, but much longer term that Shane was the guy.
And I liked it too because he wasn't running the show. Like, he wasn't the power guy or whatever. He was just basically like a manager in a way. Still trying to take over, but I liked him in this role. Mm-hmm. And I thought he was a good voice for Benoit. I thought he fit very well with him. And he was actually putting together a little interesting stable. Edge and Christian were helping him out. Kurt Angle. It was kind of a little dream faction. Never really goes anywhere. And Shane's energy was mainly focused on getting Benoit to the championship over The Rock. But I thought it was a good pairing. I thought Shane really helped him out. And I liked this a lot. I think that would have been an awesome stable. Benoit, Kurt, Edge, and Christian led by Shane. Like, if they ran with that for a while, that could have been really, really cool.
Could have had gold everywhere. That would have been very impressive. Yeah.
I think it was just poor timing because you just came off the fact sheen. You didn't really want another major heel stable. And Triple H kind of had other things going on with Angle. Or Angle, rather, had things going on with Triple H. And I could see why they didn't want Shane mixed up with that. So it was kind of a bad timing. But they could have kept him together with Benoit, Edge, and Christian for a little bit longer.
Yeah, I think so. Edge and Christian. I think that's why you saw the characters as much as we talked about this earlier. As much as they were very funny, still had kind of a very cerebral side to them. No pun intended. That kind of fit with Shane. Shane didn't want to have any goofy guys in the stable. He wanted serious winners in his stable.
Right.
And as much as Edge and Christian were goofy heels, they were still champions. So it worked out great. It was sad that it just was wrong place, wrong time at this point for heels.
Yeah, and Benoit was tearing everyone apart.
It was awesome.
He brutalized The Rock a lot leading up to this. Kept locking in the crossface, and they really put over the crossface as something, very dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And he was even putting it on China leading up to this. There's a lot of stuff building Benoit up to be a legit threat to The Rock, and he just got to stand there and laugh and smirk while Shane did the talking and come out and just wreck people. So I thought it was really well booked. I thought Benoit really seemed like a legit contender. Like, it could have been very believable for him to win here. And I think with Jericho and Angle losing, and the way they had hot potato the title around, I do think there was some legitimate curiosity going into this that Benoit could actually win the title.
Well, I mean, of all the new guys that have come in, next to maybe Jericho, well, not counting Big Show, I guess, since the middle of 99, this guy was it. And obviously, you know, earlier in the year, he had kind of pseudo won the WCW world title. It sold out, and then the whole, you know, he left, and the whole Sid's foot under the rope thing. So there was no question that he was trusted and believed as a guy that could be a world champion someday. And considering the Attitude Era philosophy of using the, you know, using the belt as kind of a hot potato to bounce around and put guys over, you're thinking, well, I don't know, maybe. But part of me didn't think it was going to happen for a couple of reasons. A, I feel like Rock was slated to put somebody else over down the line. And B, Rock really didn't get that, hasn't had that signature title reign yet. Yeah, he won it at Backlash, and that was his signature win, but his signature title reign had not quite happened yet. He only held it for a month, then he lost it, and then he won it back. So now it's only been a month since he won it. Another one-month title reign I don't think would have worked. I think it would have actually hurt The Rock.
Oh, it definitely would have. It was bad timing again. Mm-hmm. But again, you're just looking for Benoit to hang in there like Jericho did, and he does. He goes 25 minutes, tooth and nail with The Rock, really put on his level, and Rock hung with him, and to his credit as well. He really put on a great match.
Yep.
They do a dusty finish in the middle where Rock has the crossface on Benoit, doesn't let go, and the ref ends up DQing Rock. And the storyline going in was a stipulation that if Benoit won by DQ, he'd win the title. So they announced Benoit as the new champion, and Foley comes out and says, hey, I didn't see any DQ, I didn't see any reason. He restarts the match, and The Rock wins. I mean, if you're gonna do the DQ thing, I didn't really care for them like making Benoit look stupid in the midst of it. Like, he basically taps to the crossface, wins by DQ because Rock holds the hold on too long. I mean, you wouldn't want to see him win the title that way anyway, but it was just kind of stupid. I don't think they needed to do it. And if they were going to do it, they could have at least had him like smash him with a chair and pin him, and then they do the dusty finish after that. Maybe Foley comes out and turns it around or something. But
Was there two then? Because the actual dusty finish, the one I caught today, was there two then? Because the other one was Shane came in with a chair and whacked.
Oh, no, you know what? You're right. He does Rock has him in the crossface. I'm sorry.
Right, but
when they call
after,
the bell. Yeah.
Right. What happened was Shane whacked Rock with the chair to break up something. Probably maybe it was the sharpshooter or something. And he gets in the ring. Rock gets the refs down from an earlier move. Rock hits Shane, chases him out of the ring with the belt, with the chair. Earl gets up, turns his head, sees Rock drop the chair to the floor, turns around, puts Benoit in the crossface, and then Earl crawls over, taps Rock on the shoulder, and calls for the bell.
Yep. Yeah, you're right.
And then all of a sudden, it's announced that Benoit won the title based on Rock getting DQ'd because Earl turned his head and saw him with the chair. So that happens.
I definitely fucked that all up. Sorry.
I think it was the Ciroc that Claire passed you. So they walk back. They're walking back up the ramp, and you know, everything's all fine and dandy, and they win the titles, and Rock's busted open and pissed off. And because Shane cracks Rock with the chair after the decision.
Yeah.
And then drops the chair and walks away. So everything's fine. Foley's music hits. Mick walks by them, and JR is like, discounting, I don't know what he's doing out here. There's nothing that could be done, blah, blah, blah. And Lawler's like, he's going to officially announce Benoit's champion. Maybe have a new belt, I think he mentioned, or something weird like that. And Foley grabs the mic and essentially says, I didn't see any DQ. I don't know what anybody's talking about. Restart the match. And everybody went crazy. They wrestled for like another, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 minutes. And then out of nowhere, literally out of nowhere, Rock. It's kind of like what Orton does now at the RKO. Literally out of nowhere, Rock drops a rock bottom and gets a win. The match is fantastic. Rock's best match. Well, Rock's best non-Triple H Steve match in his career. Before we get to the dusty finish part, which I know you have something to say, Do you feel that Rock really becomes legitimized as a true main eventer with this match?
No, because I think he already had been. But I think this earned him a lot of respect in the casual fans' eyes. Not casual, but I guess the non-casual. Showing that he was able to really hang in a match with a guy like Benoit. Like, he had done it with Triple H, and Triple H had a lot of respect around this time as an in-ring guy. But Benoit was, like, the king of wrestling at this point.
Yeah. Yep.
So for Rock to go toe-to-toe with him and hang with him and deliver a great match, I think won over a lot of people that said, okay, Rock can get it done when he needs to. And I thought it was impressive. It wasn't a Benoit carry job. I mean, Benoit was clearly the stronger guy in the ring, but...
Right.
Rock clearly held up his end of the bargain, and I think he earned a lot of respect. I don't think it legitimized him as champion. I think he was already there, obviously, as a mainstream guy. But I think this did help his street cred.
Yeah, and again, there were a lot of people, and Scott Keith was not one of them, because I know a lot of people like to kind of piggyback him on fans that, you know, Canadian wrestling fans who think their guys get screwed. And you go to look at it to 411 and look at his – there's no way he did – yeah, he hated the – tease, but you know, who didn't at that point? And for it really made me mad that, like, oh, because Chris Benoit is a better wrestler, he should be getting everything, so he should just walked in here and won all the belts at the same
time. I mean, that was really you nailed it. That was the feeling, that Benoit should have came in and been champion, and
just because he is.
But, you know, in a different era maybe, or a different year, but you had something special with The Rock going on right now. He hadn't really had a long title reign. You had to let him run a little bit with the belt. Benoit would get his due at some point. Now, would it? You know, did people expect it to take as long as it did? No. But I thought, just like the Jericho match, this match made Benoit look legit. I thought the build really made Benoit look legit. And I think two-thirds of this... Now, all the guys losing does sting, because, like I said, the build was all about these guys breaking through and the old guard passing the torch and everything else, and you get none of it. So I could see why people were kind of frustrated with it, but... I think it all could have been rectified by just having Angle win, because you can explain these two away, and they had great performances. It's the Angle one that really was the shit in the cereal, you know.
It's a new one. Yeah, I agree, but it doesn't take away from anything. The match is fantastic.
Oh no, yeah, great match.
You know, and Rock deserved to win this match.
Yep.
Now Benoit deserved to lose. I mean, look, in this instance, I think wins and losses are irrelevant. Benoit is legitimized. It's a big match for him, win or lose anyway, because I feel that he now in the company's eyes is legitimized as, he'll get his chance.
Yep.
Now's not the time, but he'll get his chance.
Well, look, it proved they would trust him with a pay-per-view title match.
Yep.
And he went last. You know, they could easily put Triple H, Jericho last. But, I mean, this was a time frame where the world title always went last. But
right.
You know, they trusted him to go last and be in this spot. So
absolutely,
it's a great match, and it caps off the show. Two awesome matches to cap this, make this a winner, even though the end of card was a little up and down. Every match had good build to it. Every match had a strong storyline, good development. Mm-hmm. I liked the little running story with Edge and Christian. I thought that was cool. And I was really digging things at this point, almost more so than we were a couple months ago. I liked the fact Gene, that was good, but this definitely felt like a fresh breath of air. Shane is a manager, Foley on top now, Vince is gone for a bit, Triple H down a level with Jericho. You know, it felt like a very fresh card a month after we had felt kind of stale at King of the Ring.
Yep, and surprisingly, and this would happen again 18 months later, the fake out of Steve Austin on the poster didn't bother me.
No.
Where was he going to fit in the show anyway? You know, I don't think you didn't want him to, because, boy, would that have caused a big fucking shitstorm if Benoit had like the sharp, you know, had the cross face on and Steve comes in and say, you know, that would have been a fucking disaster.
No, so, I mean, I think maybe they thought he'd be back by this point because that stuff's released so early.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And obviously he wasn't, but yeah, soon enough we'll see him.
But this show didn't need him.
Oh, no, definitely not. It was a great show. I mean, it really was. It was a really fun show to relive. The opener was hot. And so was the, the cage match, Fallon and Rikishi, both worked hard too. So, all right, Scott, let's hit 5 minutes of feedback.
Okay.
Why don't you kick things off?
Okay. One of the guys so looking forward to the show finally, Jay Hinchy, Dallas gets fully loaded with a super hot pay-per-view against and one of the best pay-per-views of the entire year. A good six-person tag in the opener with the Hardys and Lita against Test, Albert, and Trish, with the Faces picking up the win. Taz, with a new demeanor, takes on fellow ECW alumni Al Snow in a decent match. Perry Saturn becomes the last of the Radicals to win gold from Eddie Guerrero in a good bout for the European title. Edge and Christian escape with the tag titles against the APA, and I love the skits of them with Christian pretending to be sick out of the match. Val and Rikishi finish off their feud for the IC title in a pretty good cage match with the highlight of Rikishi jumping off the top of the cage. Undertaker gains revenge on Kurt Angle, but Angle hung with the dead man for a little while. Triple H and Jericho have a classic last man standing match, just destroying one another. Finally, the main event, Rock and Benoit put on a clinic for the title, and the false finish is Benoit almost steals the title away. Overall, a good pay-per-view. Let's head to the next month.
Steve Rogers, yes, the IWC's worst nightmare. I know a lot of the hate tends to start with the antics that began about 10 years ago this week, but there was a groundswell that started here, especially from Jerichoholics, probably still bitter from the Phantom title change earlier in the year. At least it was a great match, though, ditto Rock Benoit, even if this shot gets forgotten about in order to enhance later Benoit gunning to break the glass ceiling storylines. Lord knows what they were thinking with Biker Taker squashing Kurt, but at least it's just a blip on Angle's record of the year. Overall, kind of just their show to get you to SummerSlam, though the internet darlings not being able to shatter the glass ceiling probably gives it a worse reputation than it deserves.
Bill Richie?
Yeah, we'll go Richie.
Richie. Hey, guys, been listening for a while now, but this is my first feedback. Welcome. When I think about this show, the one thing that stands out most for me, other than Trish's amazing hot pink ring attire, is that this felt like one of those showcase events they would hold from time to time. Every once in a while, the company will take a group of guys, in this case Jericho, Benoit, Angle, tell us that these are the guys to watch. These guys are going to be important down the road. Pairing each of them with an established main eventer, even if none of them actually went over, really helped to sell the idea that these guys were the future and sooner or later would be the ones on top.
Yep, good post.
Yes.
Chris Krager, Reunion Arena's one and only pay-per-view does not disappoint. Just as Judgment Day gave us Team Eck, Fully Loaded gave us the pay-per-view debut of Team Extreme. Terrific opener that shows how far leaders come in 3 months, from S.A. Rio's sidekick to one of the 10 most over people in the WWF. Al Snow match is a waste. If anything, they should have given Taz a hardcore title match instead. Euro title match was a fun battle and surprising upset. Arguably, Terry Runnels' sweetest triumph post-Marlena, getting 3 years' worth of revenge on China. Tag title match served its purpose for the champs, but I think it needed a pinfall by nefarious schemes. Valor Keach is one of the more underrated cage matches, punctuated by an awesome splash bump that made both guys look like stars. All I have to say about Taker in this debacle, China sold more in this night than him. Her table bump and what Val did for Rikishi really contrasts for how poor of a job Taker did here. Last Man Standing could have been match of the year in other years, but 2000 has been so high caliber, it may not even crack the top five. Rock Benoit was a hellacious main event. Wasn't surprised by the dusty finish the DQ stipulation was added. I knew it was going to rear its head at some point. All in all, a great show punctuated by a hot Dallas crowd. Maybe Vince should have had the 94 Survivor Series and 97 Rumble here in retrospect.
Stevie G. The Triple H win didn't annoy me as much as it probably would in 2002. The downside of the show is it is quite a glaring downside. Is it Taker squashing the new King of the Ring? Luckily, it didn't kill Kurt's push right out of the gate, and better things lay ahead. The main event had me believing Benoit won the title and cheering loudly whilst watching this live at 3 a.m. Two great main event matches and a good opener and cage match make this one of the best of 2000.
Brian Meyer. Bam! What more can be said about the year 2000? The product was at its peak from a business and creative standpoint, and this show is one of my favorites. Two classics to close out the show, plus a fun Val-Rikishi match. I remember a lot of people complaining that Benoit and Jericho jobbed at the time. Rock really couldn't afford to lose the title again after hotshotting it with Triple H. I thought Jericho looked really strong. I felt at the time Benoit and Jericho should have been inserted to a triple threat feud with Rock, but that's next show. Good work, guys.
I lost my screen there. Here we go. Ed Harris. Another great show, with the exception of the Undertaker match. Not sure if he was going through a midlife crisis or something, but it didn't make him look too good. That being said, the Last Man Standing match is a good one, and Rock Benoit is a fun, twisty gem.
Why don't you grab the next one? I can't talk.
Okay. Dragan Rockwell. After a tepid King of the Ring, the WWF was red hot for Fully Loaded. The fantastic opening tag match was followed by some rushed filler matches between Taz and Snow and Saturn and Guerrero. The backstage skits with Edge, Christian, and Foley were more entertaining than the stiff match with the APA, which didn't do much to celebrate to elevate the champions. The IC cage match was entertaining, and Rikishi's splash was incredible. The Undertaker showed how much of a fat prick he was during this period by squashing and burying Kurt Angle at the worst possible time in Kurt's ascension to the top. This was promoted as a main event match, and considering where Kurt would be next month, treating him like a jobber made no sense. Fortunately, part two of the triple main event was an outstanding Last Man Standing match. With next month in mind, it made sensible to let Triple H go over, but this also let Jericho look like a major star. And despite the dusty finish, Benoit vs. Rock was a stellar title match. I don't think it would have hurt to let Benoit have a run with the title, even for a night, But the WWF had other ideas.
All right, we're up against the time, but we only got two more, so let's bang them out. Kyle Lickey, loved this show. I thought Benoit Jericho came out looking like legit top guys who could hang with Triple H and The Rock despite losing. However, this is where I finally started to despise Undertaker, capped off by his selfish and horrible for business actions during the Invasion storyline. I really don't think I forgave him until WrestleMania 25. Says a lot about Angle that despite clearly looking the worst on his pay-per-view, he was the first one to make it to the top.
And finally, Corey Ferreira. Six-man tag is okay, not great, but with the Hardys and Lita make up for the lackluster work on the heel side. Taz sure has fallen from his debut with the Rumble. An awful five minutes with Al Snow and Suze. Saturday and Eddie have a fun little match, which could have been better considering whom is involved. Tag title match is pretty poor. I see no reason for Val Venus and Rikishi to have a cage match, but here we are with Rikishi doing the Snuka homage. Taker and Angle is awful, and I really hate this version of Undertaker so much. Jericho and Triple H have a forgotten classic that despite a lot of the backstage heat between the two about various things, they sure worked one hell of a match together. Benoit and Rock is great. Benoit looked like a legit main eventer in WWF, and I doubt if he worked with Triple H, he would have looked the same. That just credits Rock as a guy who can make someone look like they belong in a top spot. Great show with a double main event. And, of course, he has the very quickly the Meltzer rankings. 2 3/4, 1 1/4, 2 1/4, 2 1/2, 1 1/2, 2 3/4, 3/4 star, 4 1/2, 4 1/4.
Yep, so Meltzer agrees. Great show. All right, there is your review of Fully Loaded 2000. Scott, let's go ahead and wrap up. We'll be back Wednesday night with headlines. I'm sorry, tomorrow night. Tuesday night with headlines.
Tomorrow night, yes. Tomorrow night with headlines.
We will be previewing Night of Champions. We'll do our NFL predictions, talk about week one. We have a special guest, Mr. Steve Willey, in our Meet Place to Be Nation staff series. We'll talk to Steve. That was a big fan of the show. And had a magical run to the Final Four of the Trivia Tournament this year.
Yes, he did.
So we'll talk to Steve. Next week, we got some stuff.
Next week we will have the SummerSlam 2000 vault.
Mm-hmm.
We have the vault. And TikTok.
Ooh, a little special. We'll keep that.
Yes. There we go. Yep.
Okay. That's it. That's Scott. I'm Justin. Hope you guys enjoy the show. We'll be back tomorrow night with headlines. Until then, take care.
How do I
Never gonna get it. Never gonna get it.
Clear.
Never gonna get it. Never gonna get it. Never get it.
Just mean our Mentos on soon.
Never gonna get it. God. A star in a black cigar, strung out like a guitar. Maybe you can educate my mind. Explain all these controls. Can't sing, but I've got soul. The goal. Tell me something true. I believe in